Hello, thank you for joining us for what should be a great game.
The fourth official couldn't allow him on because the fourth official never had a cheat.
Well, he never heated up the baby, did he? Unless he's breastfeeding, he should be all right.
Hello and welcome to the Football Family, the 42's dedicated football podcast. I am your host, a poor man's Sean Dyche, and joining me today to do the heavy lifting of talking with clarity and sense are Gavin Cooney and Shane Keegan. We're with you a bit later than usual this week as we get stuck into the build-up to the Republic of Ireland's doubleheader of friendlies as interim boss John O'Shea leads the boys in green for Saturday's game with Belgium and the visit of Switzerland on Tuesday. We'll recap last Friday's League of Ireland results as Shelbourne reinforced their title credentials. But for the purpose of explanation for why I sound like I do, there is only one place to start.
The most incredible games of football you are ever likely to see, and the theatre of dreams has erupted. Amad Diallo scores the winner in the final seconds. It's Manchester United 4, Liverpool 3.
That was BBC Radio Manchester's Gaz Drinkwater, perfectly encapsulating the absolute mayhem and carnage and sheer exhilaration of what it was like to be at Old Trafford on St. Patrick's Day. There were hugs, there were tears, and there was a few brandy and Baileys. It was a mad one.
I have a sore throat just listening to you. Would you not have phoned in sick? Mother of God. That is dedication, absolute dedication to the cause. Now stretching the vocal cords today, I'll tell you that.
Well, in fairness, I was out on Tuesday with Gav for the first day of press, for the Ireland games, and I WhatsApped them asking if he could ask, who was it? I think it was Jake O'Brien, a question, but unfortunately he wasn't able to, so then I had to get Paul O'Hare from the Mirror to throw a couple of questions my way. Because first of all, Jake O'Brien speaks very low, and I sound like an absolute gobshite, so it just would have been too much confusion for people to deal with.
Jake O'Brien is a real low talker. If you know that skit in Seinfeld about the low talker, that's Jake O'Brien, as it turns out. David, I'm glad you had such a brilliant day on St. Patrick's Day. I mean, obviously Man United, Liverpool, one of the great Irish sporting occasions. So to have it on St. Patrick's Day, for Liverpool to rock up wearing green and with a Cork Eye goals, nice touch by them as well. I'm not really sure how they lost it in the end. It was such a weird game. I thought United were really good for about 20 minutes. Then Liverpool figured out that man-to-man press. They put Joe Gomez into midfield, and then they just ran the game from there. But again, this Achilles heel they have now, they just lack ruthlessness up front. Salah obviously was taken off, but he didn't play that well. And the likes of Gakpo and Diaz, even Darwin Nunez, has qualities. But in terms of output and goal scoring, it's some step down, isn't it? Jota was injured, and Mane and Firmino are gone from the club now. So it hurt them in the league game against United, and it hurt them again at Old Trafford. Bizarre to see them kind of blow up, but the... you know, in United, in fairness, having been on the ropes for so long, amazing that they won it. I thought on the balance of extra time, despite the fact that United had that patched together team, a back four of featuring Bruno Fernandes in one leg and Antony, I think they deserved it on the basis of extra time. And Liverpool, to be honest, like they looked like they were wanting to avoid penalties so much, they were almost kind of happy to lose it. Like, why did they put so many people forward for that corner in the 120th minute? But yeah, amazing stuff. Now, I'm not sure. I don't think I agree on this. Like, obviously, Mark Robbins now is the person that they'll be reunited with in the semi-final against Coventry. Is Amad Diallo going to be Erik ten Hag's Mark Robbins? I don't think so. As mad a game as that was, Liverpool were still down a few players. They were absolutely wrecked. And they're completely outplayed. I have to say, it's an amazing day, an amazing result, and that United fans, especially you, will never forget. You may never get your voice back, so that may be the reason you never forget.
But do you not think You say, mention that first 25 minutes, United should have been 3-0 up. You know, you had three chances. They obviously scored once.
United won the game by a long shot on the XG. For once, David will run with the XG here, look.
No, I won't go with the XG. I'll go with what I saw. Like, for, I'd say, obviously, the two goals before half time were the shambles. I'll be honest with you, I think 8 times out of 10, that's given as a free. That foul, the challenge, I don't think it was a free, but I think 8 times out of 10, that'll get given as a free in a normal game, and I won't get pulled up by VAR and be disallowed or whatever. But, like, Liverpool were the better team. United seemed to just kind of, like a lot of the season, almost seemed to accept their fate a little bit, and then they got the goal. But other than maybe one moment when it was a Harvey Elliott at the bar, like, I can't really remember thinking, jeez, Liverpool are just absolutely destroying United here. They just need to be the better footballing team, but couldn't actually kill the game.
Here's my question. Has anything about the game or the performance or the result, or has any of that given you... Did you walk away Sunday evening with more faith in Eric?
I fucking limped away. Well, you limped away. My legs are in an absolute chuck. I'm covered in bruises. It was like, I'll put it into perspective. Do you know what? I wasn't even thinking about that. Do you know what I was thinking about genuinely is, so two of my best mates, father and son, obviously from Manchester, like, I've been going over there for years, etc. I know these lads nearly 20 years, close to 20 years, stay with them all the time. And my mate Phil Wald Senior, he's in his early 70s, he had a triple heart bypass last July, has made it back quicker than fucking Anthony Martial from a sore ankle, right? And he is losing his head at that game. This is a fella who's also beating cancer. Do you know what I mean? And you see what, like, obviously I'm going mad and I'm enjoying it, but then you see what it's like for him. And, like, this is a fella born and bred Manchester, Mossoid, Fallowfield, and what it means to him. And then even bouncing out of that stadium, I wasn't thinking, oh, what's this for me and for Eric Ten Hag, blah, blah, blah. It's just like, you're just feeling, you're seeing the actual joy in people's faces and what it means to actually experience that sense of exhilaration in a football stadium with people who you've known the majority of your match-going life, and who you've been to fucking absolute brutal places with and slept on hotel floors with and all this nonsense, and then you're with them and you're enjoying that moment. That's all I was thinking about after the match, and it's all I've been thinking about for the last 3 days, watching the clip literally on repeat. And I'll be honest, it's like genuinely one of the best moments I've had as a football fan, in terms of obviously that moment, but also afterwards, and who would get to share it with and enjoy it with, and people who, even beforehand, who I've known since I was like a teenager, 36 now, two kids. Even my wife said it, like, you're still a bit even, but like, it's just incredible.
Overcome with emotion, David. Yeah. You're overcome with emotion.
I think we all are.
No, but like, no, it's not even about, it's like, I know, it's hard to comprehend it. It was hard to comprehend. I'm sure you've all had the experiences where, like, you think, how has this happened? Like, it wasn't a trophy.
Yeah, but it normally, I was just going to say, it normally, moments like that normally result in a trophy or an accomplishment that will stay with everybody forever. Like, you're just going to get bet by City in the cup final. Everybody's going to fucking forget about it. So what?
Possibly, yeah. I know what you mean. And then you're like, but yeah, do you know what? Yeah, I know what you mean. Like, it'll probably be used, but it's probably like what Klopp says. Well, in fairness, it's, you know, like, I think the slogan's ridiculous, but Liverpool had that thing of, you know, this means more. So, like, you can only imagine then the pain they're feeling now, the poor flowers, you know what I mean? But, like, but the point that Klopp made, which I agree with, is, like, hold on, if we're feeling this way, who cares how other people from the outside view it? Do you know what I mean? So, to a degree, I feel with that, and that's why afterwards, and, like, even what I'll stick with, as much as that, and obviously it's the madness, is literally the 10, 15, 20 minutes, half an hour leaving the ground. That's what I'll never forget, in terms of New Year's, people, random people you're bumping into, and, like, people who would have sold fanzines with when I was younger and all, and seeing them, just... Incredible.
Can't beat live sport, can you, David?
Yeah, big Sir Jim can't go knocking down Old Trafford. I mean, do it up, but don't go knocking down Old Trafford, like, fucking hell. You got to keep these places.
I just want to look at the goal again here. I know what you mean, but like, but that's what, yeah. Can we talk about Ireland now? Or can you talk about Ireland?
I mean, there's a lot less juice in the Irish camp this week than there is talking about Man United Liverpool, even what 4 days on. So I mean, Seamus Coleman and John O'Shea did press today. First time we've seen Seamus in a year. Obviously, he's been absent with that knee injury he sustained last May, which meant he's missed every Irish camp since. It's the first time I'd heard him say this, but apparently he had said it before, that he actually thought that day he got injured against Leicester last May, his first thought was, is that my career over? He thought he'd done his ACL. And then quickly, his next thought was, I love Seamus Coleman, like. His next thought was, he was put on the stretcher, because his contract was up at the end of that season, I think. And he was put on the stretcher and he thought, well, if this is my parting shot, I'm going to do what's best I can. What can I do for the team here? He can start pumping his fists and rallying the players in the crowd. It's amazing stuff. I mean, thankfully, he heard a day or two later there was a medial ligament, which obviously kept him out from May to December, but not enough happily to end his career. So he's back in the Irish squad this week, doing press alongside his old teammate, John O'Shea. So that's about as newsworthy as things get. Obviously, Liam Scales and Troy Parrott are out through injury, which is disappointing, especially for Scales, because I think he's probably first choice at this point. There is no one being called up, which means the centre backs are Collins, Amo Bamadele, Darrow O'Shea, and Jake O'Brien. So you'd imagine you'll play them all. If he's going to be happy with four centre backs for two games, you'd imagine he's not going to play a back three, unless Seamus Coleman is viewed as part of that back three. We'll have to wait and see. O'Shea was given nothing away when he was asked specifically that question at Castle Knock earlier today. And no one being called in for Parrott either. But Joe Hodge and Andrew Mourne are going to come in for the Swiss game, because they're playing for the under-21s away to San Marino on Friday night.
Can I ask you, right, you said there about, say, newsworthy. What did you make of Sam Smolik's? He's a very confident fella.
Very confident.
He feels as if he's an extremely confident fella. That's probably the polite way of putting it.
Yeah, you hear these talks of him having, I don't know, has he rubbed some people up the wrong way on his appearances around the squads in the past, or I don't know. Apparently, I don't think everybody is overly enamoured about him. And
I've heard only recently conflicting.
Conflicting? Better. So people do like him?
Some people might like him.
Okay.
I'm guessing his family.
Fair enough.
what a character reference. Some people like me.
I'm guessing people at Blackburn really like him, because they'd probably be getting relegated if it wasn't for him.
I bet they do. Look, we tend not to embrace confidence too well in this country, do we? I suppose maybe that's what's the issue here. But I mean, I am very, very, very much in the Sam Smodics corner, and have been for quite a while now at this stage. I've been banging that drum for a couple of months. Basically, since I saw him maybe two or three times I saw him early in this season, I just thought he was so impressive. Really, really so impressive. And to be honest with you, he's done even better than I thought he would do. I thought he was a good player who certainly deserved a look in around the Irish setup. Whereas his form since I first formed that opinion has been so ridiculously good that I think it's absolute madness if we don't have a proper look at him over the course of these couple of games. And whether he's confident or whether he's not, or whether he rubs people up the wrong way, or whether or not, I felt we absolutely had to go out of our way to make this man feel the love a little bit. And I do think the fact that he's been pushed out front and centre in front of the media quite a lot might be an effort to ingratiate ourselves with him and, make him feel very much a big part of the machine, if that makes sense. And to me, that absolutely does make sense.
He's also wanted to do press himself and get out there and just to quash the stories around Hungary. So, like, the story with Smodic is kind of weird, because he was, he signed up with a new agency a few years ago, told him about, who he could play international football for. He was born in England, but he's also eligible for Ireland and Hungary. Then they put into train, they contacted the FAI, and then Stephen Kenny called him in for the summer camp in 2021. They were just friendly games, so I think you can just do that. Now he had to pull out with a shoulder problem. But then there was issues with the passport, and the paperwork took forever. And I think that only cleared toward like the middle to kind of end of 2023. Then he was included in the October camp when, was it Andrew Moore and someone got injured and he was brought in, and he came in for a day or two and left for personal reasons. Then wasn't included in November. This is where things get really weird, is that he wasn't included in November. Stephen Kenny told us at the time that it was the personal reasons remained the same. You know, he couldn't, he had to go home in October for those reasons, and they took him out of the November window as well. But Smodics told us yesterday that no, there were no personal reasons in November. I was available for a call and just didn't get one. Now, obviously, at that point, Stephen Kenny was no longer building for the future. They were two dead games and in the kind of the dead zone of an Irish managerial reign, which the dogs in the street knew was up. So maybe there's not a whole lot to be granted, to be got from bringing him in there. And then there was reports in, even a month or two ago, that Hungary had contacted him looking, would you be interested in switching to us? There was cold water poured on that in the Hungarian press, and then the Hungary boss said last week or the week before that he had spoken to Smodics, but that was it. And then he insinuated that the news was leaked by Smodics to improve his Irish prospects. Now Smodics yesterday called that complete nonsense and said he'd never had a conversation at all with Hungary, which again is contradicting something a manager has said. So it's all very weird, but basically the bottom line is, here's a guy in outrageously good form, the top scorer in the championship, still the top scorer in the FA Cup. Obviously Blackburn are out now. We'll finally make his debut against Belgium, and you'd have to say, based off his goal record, his age profile, and his, he has a kind of an athleticism and physicality about him as well that we lack, I think he's a massive addition to the squad.
Well, I know we were kind of joking about it a little bit at the start of that, but Shane, you said it there about, say, that confidence. Maybe that's what's needed as well, even, and a little bit of arrogance, but also, like, how was it said, even towards the end of it, maybe the Ireland were sometimes a little bit too nice to play against. You know, maybe sometimes it's kind of needed. Not that I don't think he's a nasty fella by all accounts, by any account, but just, you know, that self-assuredness maybe of carrying yourself in games. Now, I'll be honest, he'll be doing very well to carry himself like that in international football, where Ireland are at, because you speak to any player and it's very few take the international football straight away.
I'm not saying that. And this is the important thing, is that, you know, Irish fans shouldn't make their minds up 100% on, you know, whether he's for us or whether he's not for us or whether he's an addition or not based on solely on these two games. You would like to think that he's going to be a player that's going to be involved over the next 12 months and will prove his worth or not prove his worth over those 12 months. I think the use of him is going to be key, David. You know, interesting to hear the Gav say there that he doesn't think that a back three is an option for us. I'm always pro back three, I suppose. So I am, and I suppose I had a kind of a team in my head, kind of semi sketched out, that did involve a back three, where Smodics was in the side. Now look, he's a flexible sort of fella. He can probably start the game regardless of what formation or what shape we go with. But I would love, I am. If you look at the Luton formation that Ogbene's in at the moment, I know we were going to chat a bit about Ogbene anyway, but if you look at that formation with the two behind the one, I think it would be really exciting to see Smodics and Ogbene as the two behind Evan Ferguson as the one, in a 3-4-3. But look,
that wouldn't work though. He'd be too wide. So obviously he said yesterday all the right things about, oh, I'm versatile, I'll play wherever the manager wants me to play. But when I did ask him if you could pick one position, he said number 10. He wants to be central. And then we turned to our good friend Andrew Clean on Twitter, who's always good for tweets to support the arguments. Or, sorry, I should say, we're always good for finding arguments to support Andrew Kinnean's stats. But he's tweeted like a shot map of all of his goals this season. And only about... they've all come from central areas, generally inside the box, four outside, but they're all kind of within the width of the 6-yard box. So that's the kind of area you want him in. So I do wonder, like, is the era of the back three? I know you lament it, Shane. I do wonder if it's over. You know, we've got, if this is Smodic's best position, is as a number 10 in a central area, hard to get him in that in a back three. We've mentioned the relatively few centre backs in the squad compared to who. I mean, he could have just called in Shane Duffy, like, if he wanted to, or I'm sure there's other centre backs. I know they've scouted Jimmy Dunn at QPR if they really wanted to. I know he's been playing right back, but I wonder is that going to be O'Shea's call? Do we need to change this up a bit?
So my argument there would be, I would have often used that shape myself, and quite often while you have two tens behind a nine, the two tens are detailed with very, very different jobs. And that also has the knock-on effect of who's on the left of your four. So I would be saying in a scenario like that when we lose possession of the ball, Ogbene gets out wide right, and the right-sided player drops around as a right back, if that makes sense. Whereas on the left-hand side, I would be saying that the left winger doesn't drop back, the left midfielder in the four doesn't drop back, he stays quite high, and it's up to the guy on the left of the back three to shuffle across a little bit. A la Shamrock Rovers at the moment, by the way, very, very much in that kind of sense, I suppose. I think you can keep him very, very central within that shape. Or look, you just go with what that formation looks like out of possession anyway, which is basically 4-2-3-1, and he just starts as the out-and-out 10.
I like the sound of the 4-2-3-1, I have to say. I used to be like you. I used to be quite pro back three, but I don't know. Maybe I've watched too many Ireland games, and I've watched us get beat too often. I'm sick of the back three now. Let's shake it up. But I do like the... Because if you do 4-2-3-1, you get Ogbeni and Johnston into the team as well. You know? Like, I mean, we have to get Mikey Johnston into the team because he's Europe's hottest winger at the moment, you know? So I like the sound of the 4-2-3-1 with the slight issue that the midfield is not good.
The one little caveat I'd throw in there is I did think that was arguably Josh Cullen's best performance of the season on Saturday.
Yeah.
Well, he has barely played, in fairness.
Well, he's barely played because he played his way out of the team. You know, but I thought he had a very, very good game. I saw pretty much all of that game on Saturday, and I thought he did very, very well. It reminded me of the Josh Cullen that we had been raving about up until 6-12 months ago, however long that dip in form he's had has come. So I'd really, really, you know, I'd really like to think that he's gonna rediscover that form both at club and international level. But yeah, there is no doubt that we do continue to be very, 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 very light on the quality that we need in that central area. On that, Gav, I would, like, the problem here is I understand we're playing Belgium. And I think I said this the last day. I wish we were playing somebody shit. Was that the tagline we were going to go with, David, for FAI?
Yeah.
Because then I think if you're going to have the majority of the possession, and I realise that doesn't happen too often for Ireland at international level, but if we were playing like a minnow or whatever, now I think you get away with playing Mikey Johnston, because as I said, on the left-hand side, I would be looking in that shape. I would be looking for the left-sided player to stay high without the ball, rather than dropping back as a left full, whereas I'd be looking for the right side of player to drop back because you have Ogbeni darting out there. But the one bit that you nailed is there's no doubt that Liam Scales is a massive loss there, because he is the one person who could have done that job absolutely perfectly. Ring the klaxon there, as Lee Grace does for Shamrock Rovers.
Sorry, just very briefly and lastly, David, sorry, but if we play if we play my dream 4-2-3-1, yep, you know, and we stack the team with attackers, like we're talking like Benny, we're talking Johnston, we're talking Smodix, we're talking Ferguson, you know, can we do that? Or is the midfield two going to be light? It's Cullen plus either Smallbone or Knight.
It'd be nice.
If I'm picking that team, am I being naive? And are we going to be overrun by Belgium side, which doesn't have Kevin De Bruyne?
It's hard to see what other way we go though, Gav. Like, I think, to be honest with you, I think both of us are by the sounds of things picking the same personnel. We just have a slightly different variation on what way they line up. I think the other person
you made your selection sound a lot more impressive than mine.
I think the other person who's going to be a loss there as well is Alan Brown. I think if we were only going with two bodies in the middle, his energy and ability to get around the place would be a big, big plus there alongside Cullen. Who are you playing at left back there?
Yeah, that's another good question. I don't know, to be honest. we're light on them. I mean, maybe Matt Doherty, to be honest. I mean, he's not a natural left back, but he's played at least left wing back quite a bit. Otherwise, I don't know. We're like, again, we used to be so strong at fullback, and obviously Coleman and Ebiseller and Doherty are the right back options. Manning is out. O'Dowda, I don't know. I'm still scarred from that game in Athens from seeing O'Dowda do any kind of defensive heavy job from now on. He's been retooled as a left wing back, so it's another step up again to play at left full. So maybe Doherty, but I don't know then, because you've got, like, if you are attacking, then you've got, you want someone to go around the outside of Johnston, you know, because Johnston's going to cut in. So that's probably not Matt Doherty. You'd want a left footer there. So
Robbie Brady,
maybe, yeah.
Right, there's a reason why he's in the squad.
Yeah, and listed as a defender, I think. I don't think they even listed him as a midfielder. So yeah, maybe Robbie Brady actually.
Like, had you see, this is my problem, is that had Liam Scales been available, then I was perfectly happy. Take your pick from either keeper. I would have been happy out, and then I would have said, I would have had Darragh O'Shea, Nathan Collins, Liam Scales as the three, because Liam Scales perfectly able to shuffle out there and defend out there. Yeah. I would then have had Mikey Johnson on the left of the four. I would have had Seamus Coleman on the right of the four, because they've got very different jobs on both sides because of Igbene's ability to dart out onto the right. Cullen plus one as your two centres, and then Smodics and Igbene as your two behind Ferguson, with, as I say, Smodics kind of staying central when we don't have the ball, but Igbene darting out to the right, allowing Coleman to slide back a little bit and therefore Scales slide across on the other side. The only way to continue to do that really is for, I don't know, Andrew Omobamadeli to come in as the third centre half, but I don't know, does he play on the left of the three, or does Darragh O'Shea slide over there? With a four, I have a big question mark, yeah, because with a four, now you have to play an out-and-out left-back, and I'm scratching my head. Yeah, it kind of has to be up Robbie Brady, really, if we go a four, does it? Can't see who else it can be. Yeah, Matt Doherty across the other side, maybe.
And there's probably people listening to this thinking, we're playing Belgium, we're playing Switzerland, two teams who are much better than us and should be winning those games. Why are we thinking about how or attack a game or be positive in a game? But if that's how we are thinking, surely we have to pick a system that best utilises Chidozie Ogbeni.
Yeah, look, I don't think it's, I wouldn't be arguing that it should be built around one man. I mean, he's arguably, is he in? He is. I was going to say, could you pick three Irish players of more importance than him? He's in our best three. He's certainly in our best three. But he's not. Do you know what I mean? It's not a Gareth Bale at Wales job, as good and all as he is. I don't think we have to absolutely set up our system around one absolute standout player. But you don't get me wrong. You'd certainly be looking to get the most out of him. You definitely would be looking to get the most out of him. And I just think that, As impressed and all as I was with him at right wing back, and as impressed and all as Jamie Carragher was with him at right wing back, I just don't know if we have enough in the final third to be pushing him that deep. I think he either goes right wing in Gav's 4-2-3-1, or I think he plays as one of the two tens in mine. I would be loath to be pushing him back further down the field, to be honest.
I think it's more important to build a team to bring the best out of Ferguson, I have to say. Because Benny is so versatile. Yeah, like, Ogbeni is so versatile and has such a great attitude that he's proven he can kind of excel in a number of different roles and in a number of different systems. The big disappointment, I think, last year were the Greece games, and Evan Ferguson had, I think, it's one touch from open play in the Greek penalty area in each of those games. Like, no wonder we got beat, you know? Like, I mean, Ferguson has had a rough time of it in front of goal at Brighton in the last 20 games or so. It hasn't scored since the league game against Forest back in November, December time. But one of the reasons for that is he's not getting enough touches in the box at Brighton. He's not getting enough shots away. Like, he's, now I did these stats before Brighton's most recent league game, but in terms of shot accuracy, so what percentage of his shots go on target, he's got the top rate in the entire Premier League. He's number one for accuracy, but for the number of shots per game he has, he's down in 50th position. So what does that tell you? It just tells you he just needs to shoot more. And he's not really getting those opportunities at Brighton because, well, there's a whole number of issues for that, I think. One, Brighton just aren't as good as they used to be. The midfield, obviously, has been taken out of last season's team, and now they've lost most of their pace on the wings with no March and no Matoma. Like, for part of the scoreless run, he's had James Milner playing the Matoma role, which is just it's crazy stuff, really. It's two completely different players. And often, like, a lot of his best work is done outside the box. And, you know, that, like, we can't afford, Ireland can't afford that, because the rest of the squad do their best work outside the penalty area. We just need someone to be effective in the opposition penalty area. So building a team that can get Ferguson more touches, it's really obvious stuff, but, like, building a team, like, the job of the Irish manager, as I can see it, is to build a team that has Ferguson taken more touches in the opposition box and taken more shots. It seems really basic when you say it out loud, but I actually think that's the job description.
It's quite unfortunate, really, that he plays his club and international football for two teams that struggle to make chances for a fella who is the most natural finisher that we've had in, well, obviously since Robbie.
I know. Well, the Brighton thing is just contingent, and it's a bit kind of like they have created chances for him before, obviously. It's just partly down to the system they play. He's also not the only striker in the team, usually. Like, we do forget that. Okay, sometimes it's, you know, Buonanotte and Fatty and these guys drop off, but other times it's João Pedro. And Pedro averages way more shots than Ferguson per game. Sometimes it's Welbeck, and he takes more shots. So, but he's the focal point of our team. And I think the failing that you could really point out in the Irish team when he came into it was that he just wasn't involved in attacking areas enough. And that was partly down to the calibre of the opposition. But then when you get to the Greece games, you realise, hang on, there's actually a systemic problem here. And I think basically John O'Shea, like, if you're John O'Shea, you're asking yourself, how do I win these games? I think you start with, well, let's get Ferguson firing, and then you work back from there.
And when you say the failing, do you mean the failing on his behalf or on the team's behalf?
I think the team's behalf. I think you can't just blame him. Like, obviously he did the thing he does so well at Brighton and drop off. Like, his hold up play and his link play is exceptional, really. But I mean, that will be of a benefit to us in a limited sense. Like, the more important thing is we get him scoring goals. And I think to get him in the opposition penalty area in the position where he can take chances, that's the job of the team, really, you know. And everything kind of, let's not relitigate those games, but, like, everything really went wrong there.
So then, when you lay that out though, can him and Smolik play together? If Smolik is all about being in the box and picking up in those areas, you said it there about the chances in between the 6-yard box or that with the width of the post or whatever, can they actually then play together or be effective? Of course they can play together because they can begin to be on the pitch, but actually be effective together, Shane, there's a bit, like.
Yeah, I think they can because I think Smodic wants to go wandering. I think he wants to eventually end up back in central areas, but I think he is happy to at times go down the sides, at times drop a little bit deeper. Look, he obviously has to play the role that his club are asking him to play as well, but certainly his back catalogue, I suppose, would suggest that he is one who can go wander. He's not just looking to occupy the traditional number 9 area that Evan will be looking to occupy. I mean, the other option here that I had kind of bounced around is, do we go 3-5-2 when you just play the two of them up as an out and out two? The only thing then is, well, now Agbene has to play a right wing back, which, as I say, I'm not overly enamoured with him having to play as an out and out right wing back, but it is an option. It gives us three out and out bodies in the centre of the field. Now you're going with Cullen plus two rather than Cullen plus one. And you leave the two of them up there as an out and out front two. That, you know, that side of it excites me, the idea of seeing the two of them as an out and out front two. But I just think there's a couple of limitations then elsewhere within the system if we go that way. But no, I definitely don't think that they're I would be very surprised if the conclusion we came away with after the two games, if they're both involved in both games, is that this is two guys who can't play on the same side.
You would imagine that the new Ireland manager will be watching these games. It's not going to be Lee Carsley. He's made that clear. But if you're looking at it, what can you actually learn from these games? The two friendlies, like, it's actually rare to be even having friendlies now. Like, it's always felt as if there's something that can be learned or gleaned from a game because they're being competitive. But what can a manager learn about this squad of players from these games?
I think he's, you know, just again, their strengths and their weaknesses, what do they do well, what do they not do well, what shape suits them. I think the shape thing is the big question, is the one that I'm going to be probably most intrigued by. I'll be turning up as a supporter on Saturday evening, and I will be intrigued to see what way they go about it, both in terms of the shape and the style of play. And yeah, if imagine, do you reckon the manager will be there? He hardly will he?
Well, probably it's probably already an FAI staff member who's going to be the manager. Let's be honest, the way the FAI are doing business.
Yeah, no, look, I think you're right. I think there's going to be a limited amount gained from it, but I still do think it will be a reasonably useful exercise, if for no other reason, just to get this group of players back together again and get them in each other's company, and that we can start kind of building towards something. But no, he's not going to learn a huge amount, but at the same time, he'll want to see particularly the likes of Smodix. He'll definitely want to see Mikey Johnson, I would think, starting in an Ireland jersey and what he's capable of doing. I don't know. Anything else, Gav?
No, I don't really know how much you can learn. Obviously, if the manager was actually the manager for these games, it would be a far more worthwhile exercise. That's why I don't agree with people who said, what was the rush on the manager? They had time enough to get someone in for this, I have to say. And I know Mark Hannum said that speed was not a metric by which they were was not one of their metrics by which success would be judged. And that's fair enough. And look, if it means they can get a brilliant candidate in April, and you know the pact you had to do is just to write off these March games, then maybe it would have been worthwhile. But if I was a betting man, I'll look at the name that's announced in April and feel like, yeah, it would have been a lot more beneficial had they the two games in March to work with, because you've only got another two games in June as well. I don't know why they're only playing two games in June, to be honest. I mean, I think there's a week between the games. Get another game in there, even if it's against, you know, Andorra or Lithuania or someone crap, just to, you know, just get a game, you know, and get a win, really. I don't know why they're not playing a third game in that window, but anyway, no, that's not massively important. I feel it's of limited value. I have to say, I'm really looking forward to these games now that the window is underway and we're kind of getting in the swing of talking about teams and what might work and so forth. But again, you can't even look at it from a, you know, like an interesting debate to have this week would have been who's the first choice goalkeeper. But because it's an interim manager, because they're two friendly games, O'Shea will likely just rotate and, you know, he doesn't have to make a call because he's not the full-time manager, you know. So it's kind of, I feel like it is the opportunity is kind of wasted from there. But I think what the manager looking on will learn is that he has to unearth midfield options. I don't want to be too down on us, but like Cullen, obviously Brown is injured, he's a loss. The enforcers are Cullen and Knight, you know, and Smallbone can play six, O'Shea has said, and then Joe Hodge will come in for the Swiss game. He's been playing as a number 10 for QPR. Great that he's been playing. Not so great is the fact that he's playing as a number 10, because we have enough number 10s now. Like, I mean, we need to find guys who can play deep midfield, if not as a six, then as one of a kind of a double pivot. And I think the new manager looking on, I think if they have whatever they'll be impressed by and encouraged by out of this, I think their chief concern will be the midfield options.
But then again, I'm very conscious of the fact that we're saying, well, what can you learn? But can O'Shea not lay down a marker here? But if he's able to actually make Gordon look a bit solid and actually, but I'm saying that, but then in my own head, I'm thinking we're playing friendly games. Belgium, we're probably, like, it's going to be a very disjointed game, you would imagine. Like, it's not as if it's maybe just before the tournament and, you know, possibly looking at playing a strong team. You've already seen the dropouts from Belgium with De Bruyne and even Lukaku. But, like, you would imagine that from O'Shea's point of view in the long term here, he's thinking, right, I'm going to show here how I can set up a team. Do you know what I mean? Like, not that he needs to in terms of his understanding the game, etc. But from the staff he's brought in, I think we made this point, Gav, when it was announced, like, he's not just coming in and it's a bit of a jolly to hold the fort for a couple of games. Like, the people he's brought in, obviously, I know Kerr was suggested to him, but Paddy McCarthy was his call, Glenn Whelan coming in. Like, he's putting together a framework whereby if in the two games Ireland do look a bit different than what was there before, and I would view it as one of the maybe the failings of the last year, and maybe it's because of some of the players still being a bit callow, maybe just being a bit too nice and a bit too easy to play against at times. If that does change, that's probably one thing from the manager, whoever the new manager is going to be, that they should say, well, this is no bad thing, that, you know, in terms of how we have to be setting up in that way.
O'Shea's been interesting in the sense that he has He's kept it vague in terms of like what we see in the team. There's been no obvious kind of talk about philosophy or style of play. It'll be a mix of everything, like playing when in the right areas and when the time is right, but also being hard to beat and energetic and tough and all those things. And there is also, you know, some of the players are also talking about like what are you aiming for? Like we've asked them, like what are you aiming for these game from these games? What success? And they've all said two wins. So obviously that's, you know, they have kind of renewed focus on that. Now, like, that's obvious. I mean, like, you know, they were trying to win games last year. Like, I mean, let's not be naive or ignorant around it. But that's kind of an element of what's changed. Look, it's a massive, like, forget about career opportunities for a moment. It's a great honour for O'Shea. I think he is absolutely buzzing with that, with the fact that he's going to be the Ireland manager and like organise the team and lead the team from the sideline. I think that is pretty cool honour for him. I think it's more likely than not that he'll stick around and when the next manager comes in and maybe even be their number two. So that's, you know, in terms of my previous answer about this being an opportunity wasted, that's salvaged somewhat if O'Shea's going to stick around. He has said that whoever this mystery new manager is has had no input into the squad, that he's not had any conversations with him. Have to wait and see on that. And look, as you say, like it does appear that the FAI have their man. It would be astonishing if they sat there in last month to say, basically, we have a guy. Contract obligations mean we can't announce him until April. John's just in for the interim. It'd be absolutely astonishing if they turned around and said, actually, O'Shea's going to get the job. You know, I mean, that would be crazy stuff. So it is an opportunity for O'Shea to audition himself, if not to be the permanent successor to Stephen Kenny, then certainly for another job down the line.
I would raise my hand and say I would be one man who would absolutely not be astonished if that's what happens.
Surely not. Like, I mean, you can't sit there and say we're just looking at John for the interim. And like, I mean, that'd be crazy. That would make the FAI look pretty bad.
Yeah, I'm not convinced. I'm not convinced. Look,
are you, where is this coming from?
Coming from, I mean, like I've never really hid the fact that I'm not 100% convinced. I think they're telling us something. I'm not sure if I believe it. I'm struggling so much to try and think who this mystery person could be that I think it's fucking Kaiser Soze. Like I don't think they exist. I'm telling you. He probably exists. Let's be honest, he probably exists. I'm just not going to. I just am not going to be flabbergasted if he doesn't exist. All right.
That's actually the press release. The new Ireland manager, definitely real.
Yeah, and his name is John O'Shea. I don't know if I look John O'Shea. You would imagine knows more than we know, but I don't know. I would still be amazed if John O'Shea doesn't see that there might still be a chink of light here, and will want to put in he's going to want to put in the best two performances from his sides as possible, purely as you say for national pride, for professional pride, all those kinds of things, but also maybe because there's still a squeak that there is still a door left open that sees him potentially coming into the role. I think another interesting question, I'd be interested to see what you think on this, is which is more important if you were him, a result or a performance? Like if I was to throw it at you Saturday evening, which reflects better on John O'Shea after the game? A nil all draw or a 3-2 defeat?
It's so hard to know without seeing how the game played out. But I think we'd all be feeling pretty good about a 3-2 defeat. You know, we would probably have been entertained. Unless it's a case that, you know, we're 3-0 up and Belgium get two late goals, you know? I mean,
I suppose I should have caveated that by saying an impressive 3-2 defeat. I do think, like, because these are out-and-out friendlies, as you say, which is a rarity, like, the results of these two games
matter, like. I know people are saying it'll improve our FIFA ranking.
No,
but, like, the
point.
FIFA ranking really isn't that relevant anymore. It's the old Nations League ranking that's important. We'll wait and see how the 2026 World Cup is seeded. But like, if that's off Nations League as well, and it might be because UEFA have control of that. So, and like, how do you improve your Nations League ranking? You win Nations League games. So then by logical extension, you use these games to prepare for Nations League in September. So, a nil all draw, like, I mean, look, it depends. Look, if we're really unlucky and their goal lives a charmed life and we deserve to win, etc., then there's something to come out of a nil all draw. But, oh, God, no, I don't think so.
I would say if Ireland look, you know, look well set up, don't look open, don't look as if, you know what, they could be picked apart in the game, look as if they could possibly do something on the counter-attack, like what you said earlier with Evan Ferguson, maybe work a couple of opportunities for him, look dangerous from set pieces, look as if the staff that O'Shea has assembled have been working well together and getting their message through to players, and look as if, you know what, the work that's been happening has clearly got through, the message has got through. I think that would suffice. No, I don't think anybody expects Ireland to beat Belgium. Let's be honest.
No, I get your point, I suppose. And maybe this is purely the fan or the spectator in me that's saying this rather than the pragmatist. But, you know, even you use the word, you know, can he make us look solid, all of that kind of stuff. You know, I would be much happier if he made us look attacking and exciting and like a team who can create and score goals. And if that meant we shipped one or two down the other end, I'd be able to suck that up. What I really, really don't want is kind of nearly what you're after describing there. I don't want us to lose 1-0 and we briefly looked threatening in the one or two attacks that we had, and, you know, we didn't cough up a huge amount of chances. We were only beaten 1-0. Fuck me, that doesn't float my boat at all now this Saturday, to be honest with you.
Do you know, yeah, that's fair enough, but what I would say is the best match of the Stephen Kenny era was the 3-0 win against Scotland. And that wasn't a game when Ireland looked amazing attacking all the time. It was a game where they looked really, really solid, absolutely just snuffed Scotland out of the game and played with an energy in the right moments as well, and played with an aggression. So that's what you want to see as much as that. And let's be honest, we're going to be playing against a team who are probably going to dominate the ball and look very, very comfortable against us. So if you can bring that level of energy into the game, that's what I'd be looking for, in terms of, especially for a friendly. If you can get it out of them for a friendly in the middle of, at the end of a season where a lot of them are playing for stuff,
yeah,
but then fair play.
I think, yeah, if the team can look like they can take a few punches and not fall to the floor, I think that's important. Like, too often teams score their first attack or their second attack last year. Now, look, again, Greece aside, we are playing France and the Dutch. Like, I mean, they're much better than us. I suppose you have to caveat things that way. But, you know, too often it was just, you know, the Dutch scored with their first attack in Dublin, really. They scored with one of their first attacks in Amsterdam as well. But I think it is also important. Like, the attack is what really went wrong last year. You know, I mean, for a while, like, we had the old goal scoring figured out, but we were winning games 3-2 against, you know, Armenia and Latvia and so forth. But last year, again, allowing for the quality of the opposition, but I think was it two goals in the games against Greece, against the Dutch, and against the French, home and away? Am I right to say that? One of them a penalty at home to the Dutch, and then the other from a corner in Athens? Okay, you're playing France, it's pretty damn tough to score, and they need it. But like a magic save from Magnan to keep Collins out at the end in Dublin. But like, that's the problem. It goes back to the thing I was saying about Ferguson not being involved at all home and away against Greece. Like, yeah, but yeah, that's probably, yeah. Is that a complete non-answer I've just given? Like, I mean, be stronger defensively, but also score goals. is that like the old David Moyes quote after the Fulham game, you know, United, David feels the United have to be better in a number of areas, including shooting, defending, scoring goals, conceding goals and so forth.
Trying to score more goals than the opposition.
I definitely can't see Damien Duff leaving league leader Shelbourne.
Is this our segue to League of Ireland, David? Can we just headline it there?
I thought it was going to be very smooth until you actually asked it.
I thought you were talking about the Chelsea job next season. I thought he was going to turn out the Chelsea job.
I know, especially when you know you'd beat Chelsea in the FA Cup final.
Yeah, are they, like, I mean, as every week goes by, you know, we're getting closer to the Shells are officially title contenders piece.
I've already written it. I wrote it last weekend.
were you at this game, weren't you? I mean, what do you think of Shells?
I would say very similar to last season, in the sense of very solid, But now they have someone like Will. Now they have someone like Will Jarvis who can just can take a game away from a team like he did with his two with the two goals. Even though I know Pats were like John Daly was raging about the nature of how they were conceded, but especially the first one, I don't think there's many players in the league who can score that goal or do it the way he did it. Like, I was right behind it. He did just pass it in. And tell me if I'm wrong, Shane, maybe Graham Bourke could do it on his left foot from the other side. Kind of reminded me not to... Well, I don't mind continuing the United trend, but Norman Whiteside's goal in the 85 Cup final for United, where you're thinking, how do you score from there? Like, I know they're saying, well, Freeman should have got out, and they were saying, don't let him come in on his right, and understand that. And defenders should be clued up of what not to do in terms of when you're matching up a player like that. But I don't think there's many players who can score that goal.
Yeah, look, and that's a good way of putting it, that there aren't many players who could score that goal. Like, the big thing with this guy at the moment is, like, there's not a huge amount of players at the moment who are providing much of an X factor. That's for that reason he stands out all the more, because he is absolutely an X factor, and there's a kind of an expectation now for something to happen almost every time he gets on the ball. And you know, with no Jack Byrne around, and with, you know, maybe some of the pretenders to the throne maybe not firing on all bullets, Dara Burns, I suppose, is another one who's been very good, Hoobs, in terms of just putting the ball in the back of the net. But you know, who has been the most eye-catching player from the season so far? It's been this guy by a million miles, if I'm honest, by a million miles. And yeah, he's got... Now, look, you know, the only caveat you'd throw in here is there an over-reliance on him? And therefore, if teams can figure out either how to stop him or maybe how to stop the ball getting to him in the first place, which is nearly a better way of going about it, given how threatening he's looked when he's had the ball, well, you know, what next? And look, I'm sure Shell's fans, I haven't seen enough of them yet. I'm definitely going to try and watch them next Friday night. You know, I'm sure Shell's fans would argue we have got this and we have got that. But at the moment, I haven't gone through the percentages, but I would think that he has either been the goal scorer or goal creator for a substantial percentage of their goals, which is brilliant in terms, as I say, of what he's shown, but also a little bit maybe of a worry is maybe too strong of a word, but they just, you know, they need to show that they're not a one-man side.
I would say the way they played against Pats, and I've maybe done them a bit of a disservice in terms of it was a lot very similar to last year, because it just looked so organised and all the rest of it, and they had that bit about them. Duff said different animals, and I would say when you have a player like Jarvis for the whole season, it can make you even more out of the rest of the players, because they'll put more in knowing, Jesus, once we stay in the game, not even just stay in the game, but once we do everything right, we know we could probably win this game. We'll find a way of winning it. Whereas that probably wasn't going to happen too much last year until they actually brought him in. Do you know what I mean? Even with Wood as well. But I would say the way Shell's played, and you're probably, it's the one thing that, one of the things I'd have, you'd worry about them now is, like, if they keep Boyd, Burt, Matty Smith and Jarvis fit, and do what happened last year where they improve as the season goes on and how they're playing, I think Shells will start to blitz teams in terms of that attacking. But the issue will be, like, Sean Boyd has issues with, obviously, injury, maybe can pick up suspension, but he seems like the ideal foil for everyone around him that's up there. But it's then also keeping Matty Smith injury free, and it's also making sure that Liam Bourke can find that consistency. And also the issue will be he's not going to be available for the games against Rovers.
Yeah, and I think the consistency thing is a big one there. Like, if you had said to me, and this again, I was going to say, I don't mean this as an insult, it's going to sound like an insult no matter what way I phrase it. Like, if you had said to me at the start of the season that Liam Burt and Matty Smith were going to fire Shelburne to a Premier Division title, I would have told you not a hope in hell, really. Like, I wouldn't have seen them as players of that calibre. Maybe they can. Maybe Duffer has such a good system around them and has elevated their motivation levels to such a high that they can, but I don't know. I would still be looking at you know, the support cast from an attacking perspective outside of Jarvis maybe needing a couple of more bodies around it. And look, again, you can achieve an awful, awful lot with this. Like, you know, I would nearly describe Ramblers last year as a Shelburne light, in that, you know, the same idea of
almost, you know, working to serve one master, because you know that master is capable of winning those games for you. And if everybody buys into that, it can take you a long, long way. And again, that's not me saying that the rest of the Shells players are bad players. They're just they're a good distance behind Jarvis in my opinion. And again, look, all I'm saying is if teams, and listen, opposition managers now are, you know, certainly by this stage, I think anybody who was, not that people would have been taking Shells for granted, but, you know, you maybe wouldn't have seen Shells or Jarvis maybe as, you know, a massive, massive task. Whereas now they're going to be preparing for games against Shells, as this is a huge game. These are top of the table, and Jarvis is the informed player in the league. What are we going to do to stop them? How are we going to stop them? And that, you know, I think that could potentially start to cause them problems, but maybe not.
The thing to add to this, though, is that Shells don't need to score many goals to win games, because defensively they're so good. Like, Barrett and Malloy are probably the best partnership in the league. Connor Kearns is having a good season. I actually, on form, I definitely think he should be in the Irish squad ahead of Brian Maher, if you're being brutally honest. I know Maher has more credit in the bank there and has been in around squads under Stephen Kenny for a while, but I'm pretty sure Kearns played in a home-based international under Kenny at under 21 level, and may have been in that under 21 squad for a time under Kenny, the under 21 squad proper.
Maher and Kearns were definitely in squads, underage squads together.
Yeah.
Sure.
So it's just, you know, it's just such a solid outfit. And like, here's a very bold prediction. I don't see how they'll finish outside the top three now. I have to say, I mean, if it's between, obviously they were fourth last year and Pats were third. Okay, Pats are making their customary slow start to the season because they've had to change so many players again. But I don't know. I feel that this is sustainable as far as I can see. I know if Jarvis gets injured, big problems. But like, I don't know, just with the general structure of the team, and how fit they are, how committed they are, how bought in everyone is, I think they're going to stick around up there. I really do.
Okay. Well, let's draw to a close, because I need to go and get a packet of lockets.
You've done well to last this long. I mean, there's sticking power there too.
Very impressed.
Thank you very much. I'm a great professional, as I showed on Sunday. let's all hope we have a very enjoyable Saturday watching the Republic of Ireland. Are we going to do score predictions, actually?
I think it'll be another 2-2 draw. Was it 2-2 the last time Belgium came to town? I think we'll draw again. I think it'll be 2-2.
Yeah, I was actually going to say that before he said it. I felt like I should change then, but no, I'm not going to change. I'm going to stick with that. Was my prediction. So Gav just got in there before me. I would love a 2-2 draw, and I'm hopeful that that's maybe what we'll get. As a father going with my own son and two more in tow, we're looking for excitement.
Well, I've already seen 1-4-3, so I'm not sure what to expect. Take care.
Good luck.